This is KPW 97.3 LPFM, also simulcasting at www.kpw.org. We're happy you're listening and excited to be Eugene, Oregon's new community radio station.
The Eugene Toxics Right to Know program was created and is governed by Section 54 of the Eugene City Charter. It requires that businesses meeting certain criteria report their hazardous substance use to the city, that the city make that information public, and that hazardous substance users pay fees as necessary to operate the program. For more information on the Eugene Toxics Right to Know program, contact Program Manager Joe Epley at 541-682-7118.
Talk is cheap. I'm your host, DJ SSD, here on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kepw.org. Please support independent radio. All right, today what I've got for you is a lecture from, it was a workshop that turned into a lecture, that I've edited into a lecture, of the origins of oppression. And this guy's name was, he called himself Nick. He's kind of a world traveler that went down to Chiapas and several other places looking at different types of societies. This was recorded at what's known as the Onion, which is the Unitarian Universalist Church there in Chatsworth, California. It's kind of it is a yurt, I guess. It's shaped like an onion, but it's a wooden yurt. That they do a lot of great lectures at the Onion in Chatsworth, and this was in a side room there. And as religions go, the Unitarians are pretty good people. So, real quick, I just want to mention, you know, because and I'm explaining the reason I've edited. Usually, I don't edit stuff down because context I feel is everything. So I don't usually do a lot of editing in my stuff. This has been heavily edited. I've edited out all the questions, including my own, because he built it as a workshop, and two things went on. Is he tried to get people to act out a play, and no one was into it, but yet everyone was into giving their own input into the workshop. And what happens is with everyone, you know, in corporate culture, my theory is in corporate culture, because we're just cogs in a machine, we're constantly looking to have agency and value to our lives. So this is why, including myself, we all got in there and had our little piece that we had to put into his lecture, and it kind of ruined his lecture. So I've edited all that out. So yeah, put aside your ego if you want to do activism. One other little tidbit that he said was, you know, the violent revolutions don't seem to last. So other than that, I think you'll like his radical, not a... fan of the United States imperialism, but yet he's saying we got to take the long game. We got to play the long game. And right now, I think I'm hoping we don't go to war right now. Trump to stay in office. Maybe he'll come up with a war, but I have a lot of hope. There's a lot of activists, including Cooperation Eugene here, and like I did the Mutual Aid Network last week, that are helping people. And the I'm looking at the Sustainable Law Center has a lot of projects that get you out of this crazy system that we're in. And so I have a lot of hope, but I fear tomorrow I'll be crying. 1:30 news. Check that out every day at 1:30. We're doing a lot of work on the news and the community calendar to find out what you can do to change this system. So coming up, Origins of Oppression from 2006, Chatsworth with Nick, the world traveler. Origins of Oppression. Please support independent media. Oh, and I got other surprise for you. Unreleased, a special exclusive here on Talk is Cheap. Joe Biden practicing his presidential speech long in last century, in the 20th century, when he ran for president in the back when he was a young man. So this is an unreleased speech that a White House page, a Senate page, sent us here at Talk is Cheap, of Joe Biden practicing his presidential speech as a young man. So stay tuned for that at the end. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. All right, here it is, The Origins of Oppression.
Stands up strong, but is knocked down by the storm. And then you have a reed that bends in the breeze and survives the storm. So this idea about the power of water is not a new one, but it was very interesting to me that the Zapatistas were identifying with it, that Subcomandante Marcos used this metaphor. And in fact, the indigenous people who were teaching me agreed with it. They said, yeah, that's us. We're the water. So I went back and read the Tao Te Ching, and I found this wonderful story about the Tao Te Ching. So here's our first opportunity to do some acting. So this is the story of how the Tao Te Ching was written. So what we'll need for this one is somebody to be Lao Tzu, the writer of the Tao Te Ching. Anybody got any Lao Tzu tendencies? All right.
That's not the bad boss.
Sleazy Boss is next. Okay. And you'll see that you have instructions, unless there's a quote, you just kind of wing it. But if there's a quote, you read it exactly. All right. We've also got the Sleazy Boss. Anybody been preparing to get into their sleaze mode? DJ, how's your sleaze, man?
Not so good, brother.
All right, we'll get back to the Sleazy Boss. The Friendly Border Guard. All right, I'm just going to start handing these out. We need an actor. Yeah. You want a Sleazy Boss or a Friendly Border Guard?
Friendly Border Guard.
All right. Okay. All right. So we got the boss and Lao Tzu's friends. Anybody else feeling brave? Which one do you want? The Sleazy Boss or the Friends?
So here.
pitching almost an offhand thing, an unplanned thing here in the office of the border guard. The doubt that can be known is not the true town. The true town, blah, 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 blah. Writes to the Tate Chang, hands it to the border guard.
Oh, okay, you can pass.
And off it is. All right, good job, y'all. So, I don't know if people have any thoughts about this story. I think it's a neat story, and it touches on a couple things that are relevant to the workshop. Does anyone have any thoughts about it?
Well, first of all, is that actually based on truth? I mean, did Lao Tzu write it in the border guard station there, or is this a fictional thing for the purpose of a compact presentation?
Yeah, this is, I mean, that's how the story goes. And, I mean, it's whether it's a true story, a myth, something that was added together from a couple of things. I'm not going to try to...
that's what comes
but,
out.
Yeah, this is what I found when I was researching this. And there's a couple different versions of it, so this is kind of a happy medium between the versions of it that I found. But yeah. Well, what Lao Tzu said was to his friends, "My boss just wanted to build me up strong so he could knock me down, but I prefer to remain free like the water and go where I want." So this is about co-optation, which is a big theme of the workshop. In fact, it's my assertion that in the United States, we're not very often in our struggles coming up against people with weapons or something like that. That happens, of course. But mostly we're up against co-optation. We're up against our ideas being co-opted. Does anybody want to try a definition of co-optation? Or one example that I give in Latin America is the Che Guevara t-shirt being sold at the local retail store. Che Guevara is on a t-shirt. Co-optation. Yes?
If I understand the word correctly, it means taking a symbol. It could be a person who symbolizes something and diverting it to mean something other than what the original intention was. A very good example of it is the way Martin Luther King is now diverted to look like just a civil rights leader, whereas the thing that really got him in trouble and maybe got him killed was his stand against the Vietnam War. I mean, he really came out against that.
So I wrote a letter to the Lockheed Martin Corporation saying, this webpage that you've made for Martin Luther King Day is very nice, but he had some things to say about weapons manufacturers that you might want to consider.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's what you need.
So, and then I think that that's a really good definition. The only other thing that I would add in is that I think it involves power. So when in popular culture nowadays we talk about sampling or appropriation, then there's not necessarily a power dynamic. I hear some music by somebody and I use it in my song, and artists sharing ideas and sampling from each other. This isn't necessarily co-optation. Co-optation to me involves, it's being done by the more powerful to render voices of dissent or alternatives silent. Or useful. I'd like to talk about for a moment. So, as in the division of labor, we have jobs that involve a lot of repetition. In a hunter-gatherer society or something like that, where everybody's doing everything, repetition is not going to be as much a part of, 8 hours out of our day or something like that. Repetition is very much linked to institutionalization, which is a very important force. Institutionalization is something that we'll get at in a little bit later, but the idea of institutionalization to me is what made it possible for Christianity to go from love your enemies to the Crusades in 1,000 years, right? This is institutionalization, and co-optation as well is certainly relevant to that. In fact, unlike the Che Guevara t-shirt, which is still, at least it's still Che Guevara, right? You can still go and read the book, it's promoting the idea of Che Guevara. It's a co-optation. A corporation is making money off it, and Che Guevara would roll over in his grave, and the dismembered pieces of his body that were chopped up by the CIA would each roll over on their own, I guess. But in terms of going from love your enemies to the Crusades, that's like 180 degrees. That's a complete co-optation. That's Orwell's War is Peace. So the mechanisms of 180-degree co-optation are very powerful and important to think about. Also, I wanted to say, you were talking about what we do to children and so forth. An inspiration to the Soma therapist that my movie is about, and also someone that I found very early on by the mother figure, the female component of that is a little bit more complicated, and they refer to it as emotional blackmail. So it's, at first there's unconditional love, and then eventually complete the task and do a good job, and then you get the love. So the love becomes conditional on success. And this ties in very much to the Tao Te Ching, which talks about the problems that occur when you reward, when you praise success too greatly. Tao Te Ching, I'll read some quotes from that in a moment. If you overly esteem talented individuals, people will become overly competitive. This is the Tao Te Ching. Now, this is a very difficult idea for us to grasp in this culture because we're used to esteeming talent. This is a very strong basis of our way of living. So these ideas are all through the Tao Te Ching. Success is as dangerous as failure. These are relatively complicated. There are other ideas that are much easier for us to understand, I think, like when the country falls into chaos, politicians talk of patriotism. As people on the left or whatever, these ideas are a little bit simpler. But the ones that have to do with esteeming talent and so forth are a little bit more complicated. Only when there is no competition will we all live in peace. Now, this is very difficult for us to conceive of. In fact, people might go so far as to say it's human nature that we should be in competition. And this is a very important transition into my next question, which is, what is human nature? And who are we? If the Zapatistas get to be the power of water, and they're going to identify with that, who are the people living in civilization? Are we a bunch of swords? Do we get to be something cool like the water? Or what's our role? And well, of course, he doesn't say if you esteem anybody, it's a problem. He says if you overly esteem. So this is the question. There's distinctions to be made, but I think that, I mean, you hit it on the head. To be conscious of that dichotomy is very important, and it's very difficult for us. We're very much used to praising success and so forth. It's a basis for our way of looking at the world. So, sure. I mean, you, this, so in our news, of course, the idea of co-opting is, you know, constantly there. The idea of, you know, bias, these are certainly questions. And then the whole framework of what something means. You know, very often there'll be a tragedy like Katrina or something like that, and then the conclusions that follow from that, oh, this shows that the government is not this, this, and this, and that we need to hold the government accountable for this. These are not necessarily the conclusions that the news media is making. They might make an entirely different set of recommendations and point the finger in entirely different directions. So what we can learn from events, this kind of ties back to the idea of, like, how I like to talk about education, where we're going to make up our own ideas about things, but our news media is certainly trying to channel that in one direction at all times that affirms the state. I work with homeless people in Houston, with Houston Food Now Bombs, and when I mean, basically, in summary, when my solution is generally so different from the city's ideas, that their ideas generally tend to be, let's find some way not to have to see the problem, you know, that's, and so if you were to say, there's this and this problem about the homeless, they were like, oh, well, we should put more money into law enforcement or something like that, you know, co-opting the whole suffering that's going on to be a chance to increase the budgets of various groups. I went to a meeting of Homeland Security in Houston, and it was very boring. It was about hours and hours of every local police department, fire department across the state coming in and asking for money to buy high-tech cool stuff and hire more people or something like that. It was just like a big chance to get a piece of the Homeland Security pie. There was no discussion about real security. In fact, what amazed me about my trip there was I got bored after a while, and I was like, I can't stand this. I'm going. Walked out to the parking lot, got to my car, realized I had forgotten my backpack, and went in to get it. I left my huge backpack inside, and I realized there's no security here. There's no security. I don't have a metal detector. I don't have a guard. So it shows that they're not worried about thinking about security in the first place. To me, they're thinking about how do we increase our budgets. And so co-optation is definitely something that you'll that we can keep thinking about throughout this. So, who's read Ishmael by Dana Quinn? One.
All right.
Okay, so when thinking about who are we, who are the people that live in civilization, my next kind of stop was I'm going to check out the Garden of Eden again. And I'm going to get into what Dana Quinn says about it in a minute, but first I just want to talk about the Garden of Eden story a little bit and some stuff that I've been observing. A lot of people don't really identify with the Garden of Eden story. They don't really say, oh, this is how it really happened, right? In fact, a lot of Christians don't even really know what to make of it exactly. It's a weird story. And but I think it ends up being a wonderful way of describing who we are. We're the people that think that we suffer because we didn't follow a rule. And this, the authoritarian implications of the Garden of Eden story, we had a wonderful paradise. There was only one rule, but humans are flawed and they couldn't follow it, and therefore we suffer. This is a very important thread in understanding who we are, to me. And so this has implications all across the board in the criminal justice system. Does the fact that we have 2 million people in our criminal justice system mean that the whole system is broken? For some people, yes. For other people, well, no, these people, they broke the rules, they did wrong, they should suffer. And this idea that punishment should be meted out to those who break the rules is a surprisingly limited idea in the world. In fact, there's lots of indigenous cultures that have no conception of this. And of course, when you go to the animal world, you would have a hard time finding an animal meeting out punishment to another animal for not following a rule, right? So this is a relatively narrow conception that we find in civilization, that we should punish people for breaking the rules. There's the complete opposite in some indigenous societies. There are groups, there's a tribal group in Nigeria somebody was telling me about, where if somebody does something that's a problem, then they all, the whole community circles up and everybody gives praise to the person, not praise, but tells a story about the person, about something that they did well. Oh, I remember when you were 5 and you helped me with this and this for the whole day, and you know, and they go around the whole thing, and that is intended to bring them back into the community. A very different conception than crime and punishment. People have a very hard time believing that there are any groups in the world that don't use this model of crime and punishment. And I've been in indigenous communities and I've seen other things being used, and people have a very hard time believing it. They say, well, maybe they don't call it crime and punishment, but it's still crime and punishment. And so, for example, I would say in Chiapas, among the Zapatistas, that are kind of an interesting mix of indigenous traditions and radical leftist traditions. They have both of those, and they're both very strong, so that they've looked at some of their old customs and just have to change them because they want them to be more gender, have more gender equality or whatever. They've changed a lot of their ideas, but their indigenous systems are very much intact, and they don't have a sense of crimes. They have a sense of problems, and these could be crimes in our society. They could be what we call crimes, like murder and rape. They could also be things that are just problems that aren't crimes in our society, like somebody pees too close to my house all the time, and I asked him to stop, and he didn't stop, or infidelity. Infidelity is a wonderful example because infidelity is something that all kinds of indigenous systems have some way of dealing with it because it creates problems. And in our society, it's kind of like, well, it's not illegal, so you're on your own. You know, it's there's everybody kind of deals with it in their own way, in a very individual, isolated kind of way. There's no process to go through to deal with things that come up, like infidelity, that cause problems. Some of these systems in indigenous societies seem incredibly complicated to us. It's so much easier in the United States when we do whatever. We don't have a whole process for this. And then, for example, we can just propose marriage to anybody in our society, and there's no particular, I mean, maybe you get down on your knee or something, but I mean, there's really no tradition about how you propose marriage in particular. Among the indigenous living in the south of Mexico, they have a very long-standing tradition that goes back thousands of years. And if you kind of look at it, it's very interesting. What happens is the boy tells his parents, you know, I'd like to marry this girl, or I'm interested in this girl, or however they discuss it. And when the parents feel the time is ready, which could be years later, they spend a whole day cooking, and they make favorite dishes of this girl's family, and they walk miles and miles to her house and present this feast. They say, "Hello, we're here. We've made all your favorite dishes." And the first time, the girl's family always says no. No, it's not a good time. But we spent the whole day preparing your favorite. No, not now, sorry. So they stay at the door for a while, but then they end up walking home. Share the food with lots of other hungry people that are around there. There's no lack of hungry people. And then they return again. The second time, maybe after a little bit of negotiation, they get in. And maybe after that meal, or maybe after another meal further down the line, the idea of the marriage starts being discussed. If the third time they come, they don't get in, then the ideas don't come back again. And the result of this, and I should add, that women being married off by their fathers without their consent is something that the Zapatistas changed. The women's collective of the Zapatistas wrote the revolutionary laws of the Zapatistas to change that, so that no one could be married off without their consent. And the result of this is that despite the fact that they have very liberal and easy divorce laws, divorce is virtually unknown there. In fact, the Zapatista kid was asking me, why do people get divorced so much in the United States? It's a very difficult question for me. I said, well, our communities are very different. We're not used to, we don't all grow up knowing each other. We don't, we move around a lot. We have different income and different jobs, and we have to change where we are and all these things. And I said, you know, we don't even know each other. We don't even know our own neighbors. And the indigenous boy said to me, no, you made a mistake in Spanish. And I said, no, I don't know the names of the people living on either side of my house. I don't know their names. And he couldn't believe me. To him, the definition of the word neighbor was incompatible with what I was saying. And so I look at this idea of this complicated proposal ceremony, and what I feel about it is that, well, however complicated it is, apparently it works. So I'm curious as to why. And one of the things I came up with is that the rejection of this boy is not his own. The whole family was rejected. They all cooked together. We all made your favorite foods, and now you're sending us away. So it's shared among them. And it's not, he's not saying, I love you, will you spend the rest of your life with me, and then he's turned down. It's all connected with this thing about food and sharing and all these things, so that there's not like this moment for the boy to be like, I've been rejected, I have to go jump off a cliff. It's like, well, we'll try again, and the rejection is spread out over a long period of time, and it's the whole family shares it together. So I think it's a really interesting ceremony, and there are lots more that I could go into. I think that the idea of involving the parents in such a basic level for them ends up having some significance to why marriages last longer. That's not to say that people don't leave the community, you know? I mean, maybe in that type of situation, a couple would leave and move to a city, or leave and join the Zapatista army off in the jungle, where the standards are going to be different. So there are probably other options, but not staying in the community. It would mean a break, I think. Okay, I want to talk about the psychology and the sociology of oppression. I feel like we're in an oppressive system, and when I talk about co-optation, let me give an idea of why co-optation is important. I said we're not confronting very much, at least people in the middle class are not confronting a lot of direct violence. We're confronting a lot more co-optation. An example of this is that I have enough money and enough free time to study all kinds of interesting ideas about politics, but necessarily, I'm a little bit higher up on this tree than other people. And my tendency to shake the tree a lot might be limited because I'm benefiting from the society. I'm inherently a part of this thing that I'm critiquing. So, to some extent, the force of my criticisms are going to be co-opted a little bit. And it's not to say that I couldn't get to radical, to root-level criticisms, but it's going to take a lot more work. And all the time, things that I'm doing involve compromises with the system. I'm driving a vehicle, and I'm wearing clothes that were made by all kinds of horrible conditions and all kinds of things. So I'm compromising my ideals all the time. So the idea of co-optation for me is essential in understanding where we are. Another way to look at it, John Holloway, who writes about the Zapatistas, he wrote a book called Change the World Without Taking Power. It's a very interesting book, and he says that we're in the middle of a spider web, and we're going to try to unravel a little bit and get out of it. But there's no objectivity. There's no clean hands, right? We're going to get a little sticky on the way out of this, to say the least. Maybe together we're able to do some things, hopefully. But it's not going to be a situation where we can say, I'm free of the spider web and now I'm, you know, set up my own thing, right? Where it's a very corrupted, co-opted set of options that are open to us. Does that make sense with people?
Yeah. Was that John Holloway?
Yeah.
Can I ask?
Yeah, well, I think this brings up the topic of co-optation of all of these great ideas that we associate with the United States. It's like, and this co-optation has been from the beginning. It's not, you don't go to some place in the past history of the United States and everything was cool then and now it's been corrupt. This co-optation was simultaneous. You know, it's like whether it's the genocide of the Indians or the Civil War, the brutality of the Civil War, or the, you know, oppression of Jim Crow or whatever, the oppression of workers, I mean, the quelling of all kinds of, you know, needs of workers' groups in our history. Of course, like, we know there are a couple books on this aspect of history, of course, The People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. Another really wonderful one that I recommend is Gone to Croatoan, The Origins of North American Dropout Culture. And it talks about all the wonderful groups that looked at the way that Indians were living and looked at the way that other runaway slave communities were and said, I'd rather be part of this. Gone to Croatoan. Gone to Croatoan. It's an AK Press book. Well, what's amazing to me about evolution is that everybody thinks that means every individual against each other, but in evolution, there's groups. You wouldn't talk about evolution of an individual ant. You would talk about to the whole anthill. You wouldn't talk about any animal. It depends on the whole herd. Humans naturally tend to live in community. So the question is not individual against individual necessarily. In fact, if you look at indigenous groups throughout history, a pretty good number of humans living together tends to be around 90. And if it got a lot bigger than that, maybe it split into two. Or if it got smaller, maybe two of them joined up. But humans had a long history around the world, but like hundreds of thousands of years long history of living in communities. And communities compete. And there's certainly like death and competition and starvation. I'm not pretending that I'm not advocating some kind of a system to bring us to the Garden of Eden where everybody can eat as much as they want and have as many kids as they want, as if this planet can sustain infinite numbers of people. I'm advocating a consciousness about co-optation so far that I think will inform everything that we do, whether it just be reading or whether it be working as an activist. And I'm also going to advocate some principles of the Zapatistas that I found really useful. And so I don't want anyone to be confused to think that because I'm questioning civilization, I'm saying that means what we need to do is end civilization and go back to something. Because humans don't have any ability to end something and go back to something. That's not a reality. Overthrowing the Tsar in Russia didn't exactly bring in a set of leaders that were better than the Tsar, right? Yeah, you can overthrow the Tsar, you know, and you can have Stalin. I don't know if that's an improvement exactly. I would argue that it's not. Yeah, French Revolution too. So this question is very, you know, the idea about thinking about revolutions has really evolved, and the Zapatistas have kind of been students of this. They've seen problems. They've seen what Castro did, a very authoritarian system, a very patriarchal system, and a system without a lot of freedoms. They saw what the Sandinistas did, an incredible bunch of stuff being done by the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. They actually had a democracy that was much more democratic than anything we could imagine, in the sense that they were in a war against a group, the Contras, that were torturing them, and it was a brutal war, and they allowed this group to have a radio show on state radio. They allowed this group to run a party in the elections. It would be like Al-Qaeda being allowed to have a radio show and run a political party in the United States. It's inconceivable the levels of democracy that they open themselves up to. But at the same time, patriarchy and vanguardism are very much part of the Sandinista movement. Does anybody want to take a crack at vanguardism, what that means in the context of revolutions? Right, I would like to change the world without taking power, the way that John Holloway puts it. Yes, yeah. We'll definitely get to violence and brutality in a little while. I have a lot of material, so I'll try to keep going. It might make more sense further down as I get through more material. I think that this is all of these questions are very significant. The way that John Holloway describes this thing that we're fighting against is, you can think of it as whatever you call it, capitalism, imperialism, neocons, neoliberalism. I mean, all of these things are part of the problem. You can think of it as this curtain that we want to rip down, but the people probably won't be able to deal with that, and they'll probably put something up very similar to it. And his idea is, let's take this curtain and create ways of seeing through it. Let's create rips. And these rips in this curtain, instead of, could be on any dimension. So it could be this region of Chiapas. We would like this to be a little rip in this cycle of imperialism and depression. It could be temporal. For this conference, this weekend, we're all going to treat each other in a way that is different from oppression. It could be within a group. Our group is going to relate to each other in this way. It could be about a resource. In Bolivia, there was a victory regarding fighting against the privatization of water. And so they're saying water's not going to be part of this global economy that's oppressing us. We're going to make water into one of these rips. It's going to be like a system, something that's there for everybody. And the things that are there for everybody, they're all around us. Air is a good example, but they're increasingly not really being there for everybody. There was a period in the United States when you could very much live with the whole community in a nomadic way, travel around, set up your tents wherever, and there was plenty of land. Nomadic life, in that sense, is not really possible. You can be on public land or government land or private land or whatever, but I mean, there's not really just a sense of, I don't know, it's just a field, you know? And so the sense of what is the commons is always changing. But in Bolivia, they said, we're going to make water for everyone. It's not going to be something that, like in South Africa, that the people who don't have enough money to pay for their water bill, they have to go drink out of the sewer. I think that's one way to talk about it. But let me continue with the material, because some of these things are going to be clearer as I get a little further. It's kind of hard to jump in at the beginning. I was talking about the implications of the Garden of Eden. And the things that I was saying about the criminal justice system, we could raise these same criticisms, these same ways of looking at our international relations. So in the same ways we say, why is it okay that this many people are locked up in our system? Well, because they did something wrong, because they were bad. Again, why is it okay that we're blowing up children? Why is it okay that we're littering the world with depleted uranium? And the question is going to often come back to, well, they did something wrong, they were going to do something wrong, they wanted to do something wrong, they were talking about doing something wrong, some rule, something like that. This idea of they were rule breakers is going to constantly be thrown up. And then, of course, when the rule thing fails, and it's like, man, they didn't have any weapons of mass destruction, we can always fall back on the patriarchy, the assumption that they don't know how to do it, we do. And the patriarchy is always there. This was there from the beginning in the Americas. These people here don't know how to live. We can help them. And this basic assumption is very much, you know, when all of the reasons and all the rationale falls away, it's always there. They don't know how to live democratically, as you were saying, in these countries, as if they didn't have a democracy that, you know, something a lot more like a democracy that we overthrew very recently. So, yes, this is definitely one way of looking at it. Man is evil, and the best we can do is control him, put up the destruction a little bit, limit the amount of destruction. You know, there are these ideas. And there's this other set of ideas which can kind of be broadly classified under this idea that you hear at at the World Social Forum every year, which is Another World is Possible. And there are some people that don't believe that another world is possible. And I do have things that I would like to say to those people. Examples of cultures that aren't based on the idea that man is evil that did pretty well for a very, very great number of years, thousands of years. Fundamentally, we may have a disagreement. I think that the idea of some radical, when I say radical, I just mean getting to the root of the problem. A lot of radical ideas today is based on saying that this idea that man is evil and needs to be punished or needs to be limited or...
Brought to you by Silt River. Okay, KEPW, LP, 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, at Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kpw.org. All right, that's a lecture on the origins of oppression. That's where my tape ended. And recorded in 2006 in Chatsworth, California. That was Nick of the Houston Independent Media Center. Okay, so I listened to this show while I'm working, driving... called Brooke and Jeffrey, just to stay in touch with pop culture. So here's a little public service announcement. And then I have, Joe Biden, young Joe Biden, practicing his presidential speech back in the 20th century when he was young. Exclusive here on Talk is Cheap. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening. Support independent media.
Today, instead of singing Miley Cyrus's hit song Wrecking Ball, it's Young Jeffrey's Cotton Ball.
Are you trying to be Pfizer's theme song?
I don't know. Just, you know, when you get vaccinated, they put a cotton ball
on.
So, this is for them. Here we go. I'll point when I'm ready. Point! Oh God, we're drained. Facebook complains. We all just wanna go outside. Last touch I felt was with myself. Meanwhile, my dog will run and hide. COVID, go away so our kids can play. No more meetings on Zoom. Cases on the rise, sports games jeopardized, feeling like we're all doomed. But then I found an article. Says Pfizer thinks they're getting close. Am I high on dexamethasone? Or did they really make a vaccine that could end quarantine? I think that I have lost my mind, and now my brain is Kanye bound. Kids distance learnt, mommy got turned, while Chuck E. Cheese's was shut down. Long to stay up late, go out on a date, fun stuff we used to do. Take a trip to Spain, cough in a P.F. Chang's, people glaring at you. But there's a pharmaceutical given by a health professional. Well, the name is unpronounceable, but they think that it could curb this disease. They'll hit me with the cotton ball, cleanse the area with alcohol. Promise me the pain is minimal. Take that needle and she'll inject me, all to protect me. But will it be affordable? And who is gonna have it? Could you buy it in bulk at Costco? Or half off at a Target? Ladies won't check me out.
'cause my winter body's a mess, but my antibody's a yes. It has been so long since I've hugged someone, I've forgotten how to. We wanna go watch football in a stadium that's packed and full, where the energy is palpable. Unless, of course, the Jets are your team. The vaccine, it could change it all. The world go back to normal. Meet some randos at the shopping mall, and no one could ever correct me. You can't infect me. If we get the vaccine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, all right,
I feel so good.
I'm done.
That was the true song of hope for 2020.
All right, that's from Brooke and Jubal. All right, it used to be Brooke and Jubal. It's Brooke and Jeffrey. That's Jeffrey, the producer of Brooke and Jeffrey. I just listen to them to keep in touch with pop culture. So, okay, so as promised, an exclusive here on Talk is Cheap with a practice speech of Joe Biden practicing his presidential speech back in the 20th century when he was a lot younger. So here you go, Joe Biden practicing his presidential speech.
Senators, representatives, troops. You want to know what the state of the Union is? And I'm going to tell you what the state of the Union is. You know, our folks say that there is a fly in the ointment. And it's not the communists, and it's not the birchers. There is a villain in history, though. And it's not the Jews. It's not the labor leaders. It's not the bankers. And it's not the Russians, and it isn't even the Chinese. Who? Who, after all, then, has caused all of our troubles? Those who are stiff, baby! Not with love, but with age! So while we're young, we've lived in small pads with no bread. While they're living high and fat with all the money! Well, troops, I want to tell you that they're heavy with honey, and they can't fly. You better believe me that they can't fly! Now, some of us have changed this for ourselves already. But now we're going to change it for everyone. You give me the tools. You give me the laws. Give me the power. We're going to make 30 a mandatory retirement age. And we're going to set up rehabilitation camps, mercy centers in every state of the Union. Citizens will report to them after 5 years at the age of 35. And there, in groovy surroundings, we're going to psych them all out on LSD, babies. That way, they're not going to hurt you, and they're not going to hurt me, and babies, they're not even going to hurt themselves anymore. They won't draft us. We'll draft them! And some of them are really going to dig it. And that's going to be the real mother-loving gas.
There's going to be cats who want to split from taxes, diners club, crazy birds, crazy wives, and crazy husbands. Millions, troops, but millions are going to go willingly. Just tell them they don't owe nobody nothing. And baby, what a wrap-up.
We're going to put everybody over 10 out of business.
I just want to say, I noticed when they try to do 60s music, when the establishment tries to do 60s music, they just always get it wrong. I remember an episode of Gomer Pyle where Pyle takes a gal out, the general's daughter, to a disco, it would be the Fillmore back then, wasn't it? It was before disco. And they just always get the 60s music wrong. I don't know why they didn't just hire someone from the 60s to play the music, but this Wild in the Streets, they did it pretty well. It was and I guess the monkey, you know, in a monkeys sort of way, because Davy Jones was, I'm told, was involved with it. So yeah, that was Wild in the Streets. All right, so I just found this really is blowing my mind. So yeah, KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Community Radio, also streaming online at kpw.org. Please support independent media. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Brought to you by Polytheme Pants.
Silence drowns the scream. This is KEPW.org, Eugene Peaceworks Radio, where no voice is left unheard.
We are Eugene Peaceworks Radio, KEPW 97.3 LPFM, also signcasting at www.kepw.org. We are homegrown community radio.
Honey, I am so bored. It's Sunday afternoon. Nothing's open. What can we do?
I don't know. What should we do?
Well, I've been listening.